Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line, as always, Mr. Ethan Blue is Best Sacks. Are you ready to call it? Is blue the best color in the format?
Yeah, I'm going to take the ultimate format troll award away from DeFore, and I'm going to say I think blue is the best. Though I think I'll go back to our discussion last week about color rankings. Maybe it was 2 weeks ago. I don't quite remember that you were like, I think the scuttle is that red is the worst. And I think that is the scuttle.
Is that yes, red is red the is worst. Definitely the worst. That's how I feel right now. But I also feel like no hyperbole. I think blue might be the best right now to draft. Like, I don't think it is the highest power level, but right now in the meta, blue feels pretty open and undervalued, and I think it's really good at letting you build control decks.
He said it. Meta. We're talking about the meta shifts in Limited. I agree. Well, I don't know if I agree that blue is the best to draft right now, but it is what I am drafting a lot of right now. Did you see my double Simulacrum Synthesizer deck that I posted on Twitter?
I did. I popped into your Twitch chat during my lunch
break. Right. You were a proud member of Twitch chat with the archive trap pick. I forget. I don't know if you were there when I was saying, like, 10 minutes later, I was like, man, that got me really steamed. That got me all tilted.
I was still there. I just figured I wasn't going to poke the bear.
Oh, wow. You're much better than I am. If I ever got that kind of meat on the bone, I would definitely poke the bear for sure. Yeah, I've been doing a lot of, like, this week feels like a sort of like breaking out of the shell for me in the format. I've gotten to do a lot of sweet things. Definitely the double synthesizer deck was sort of a peak format draft for me. But I also got to do the blue-green spider spawning. I had double Rise of the Varmints, double Slickshot Lockpicker, and double Patient Naturalist for the self mill. Got to make, like, I think my peak was something like 21, 22 Varmints on board. So I've done some sweet things in the format. I don't know if I'm still sold. I think I'm just not sold on this format is what I'm going to say, because, like, whatever, we're now 3 weeks deep and I'm like, well, I'm not sold. Jury's still out. I think the jury's back, and it's just that I'm not a huge fan of this format, but I definitely had some fun this week.
Yeah. Well, and I think independently of each other, usually this episode's a little bit looser on the show notes side, because we're going to look at one of our Arena Open drafts. I was thinking last night, I'm going to get some stuff down on the show notes. I want to talk about blue. And then I opened the show notes that you had already shared with me, and it was talking about blue. And I was like, yes, great. This is perfect. No work for me. And we want to talk about the same thing, which means, like, I do think that's where the format's headed right now, is towards blue. I have not done quite as many sweet things as you, but I've been playing a lot of blue decks, playing against a lot of really good blue decks on MTGO and some Arena Best of Three, trying to prep for the Arena Open drafts this weekend.
And how was your experience with Sealed yesterday, getting into day two of the Arena Open?
Oh, horrible. I luckily got there on the second bullet. So my first bullet was green-white aggro, just bread and butter, pre-con green white aggro, and I was like, great, I'm gonna get in one and done, this is gonna be awesome. And no, I got wrecked by every possible rare imaginable at the right time. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, oh, this is gonna be horrible. Second pool, I opened a very powerful pool and just built Grixis bad mana 777, just like we teach you on Lords of Limited.
Classic.
Double blue, double, yep. Black and double red cards. No cruel ultimatum though. And then at 18 lands, seven of each color, plus an Oasis Gardener. So I kind of had eight of each source if you squinted really hard. And the mana worked out for me, and I got there with a lot of powerful cards.
Nice. Yeah, I decided to do best of three yesterday. I was like, I'm gonna start with best of three. I have time, and I haven't really played much best of one, like, save for, I think, I've been doing quick drafts at the gym. I do, like, fire up a quick draft on my phone when I'm doing cardio at the start, and then, like, that gets me my whatever 5 or 10 minutes, and then, you know, play out the rounds whenever in between sets. But most of my play has been best of three. So I was like, I'm gonna try the best of three play in, and got there one and done, thankfully, with a really bad pool. Like, it was I don't know if you peeped the deck, but it was just, like, incredibly medium. I had no good opens. I built red white aggro and sided into red black removal when I was on the draw, and just got there. Just a beautiful, like, my game three of match four, which is that's the qualifying one. You have no losses to give when you play best of three. So game three of match four, I had my opponent to five life on their end step, but they had, like, Arachdos in play. They had just, like, they were gonna win. And I was like, okay, I am gonna activate Deadeye Duelist. I'm gonna get them to four, and I just need to draw Skewer the Critics. And there it was. 20.
Yes!
top of my 25 card library, just Skewer delivered, and I went, ping you down to three, Skewer, you're dead, let's go.
You'll love to see it.
So yeah, we are going to talk about, we have a JLK What's the Play. We're going to talk about blue and blue-red in this format and just like where we're at with the M word, the meta, where we're at with the meta this week. And then we're going to get into Ben's Arena Open Day 2 draft log. We are recording on Sunday. We always do on Arena Open weekends. We record, we do the draft, and then we record, and then we play out the matches. And hopefully we'll have another draft for each of us a little later on in the day. But first things first, let's take care of some housekeeping. Let's talk about the Patreon. Patreon.com/Lords of Limited is where folks can go to give back to the show if they so choose. The show, of course, always going to be free, but we have some perks over there if you want to give back to the show. The base level is everybody gets access to the Lords of Limited Discord. Look, just this morning, I got pinged in the Lords of Limited Discord. Someone had about 3 hours left for the best of one arena play-in qualifier. And they were like, I have a lot of power. I don't know how to build this deck. Help. And they added me. They were like, sorry to bother you, but there's 3 hours left and I really don't want to screw this up. So you too could ping me last minute with your sealed builds. If you're in the Lords of Limited Discord, get some last minute advice on your builds. But you don't have to just get advice from me or Ben. You can get advice from our whole host of people in the Discord who are like-minded, limited individuals. Great to be in the Discord on weekends like the Arena Open, weekends like the Arena Qualifier, which is going to be next weekend. Just awesome to be there for like the watch party we had last weekend with the PT, et cetera. Like it's just a great community to be a part of, I think, all the time. And there's a lot of great other perks as you move up the reward tier rankings if you're interested. And we, of course, want to shout out our new patrons the first week that they join. So this week we are welcoming Dylan, Adam, Corey, Nicholas, German Gary Oak, Miguel, Gabriel, and Baster. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Yeah, cannot say thank you enough. And that takes us into our JLK What's the Play. We've got a good one here. I think this scenario, not necessarily like the toughest answer for me, but mm-hmm. I do think the broader questions that it proposes are quite good.
Big agree.
So here's the sitch. We've got an overview of the deck. It's a Simic deck featuring Doc Orlok. That's the blue-green card that makes your plot cards cheaper. And 7 plot cards, including 2 Djinn of Fool's Fall and a Spinewoods Paladin at the top end. Bristly Bill as a bomb rare. That's the 2/2 that puts +1/+1 counters on things for landfall. And Splashing White for Savala Eager Trailblazer. That's the 4/5 that poops out 1/1s whenever you cast creature spells. Unfortunately, my only protection spells in the deck are 2x Failed Fording and 1x Decisive Denial. So here's the JLK What's the Play. To get into the play, we're on turn 2 when you rip a Bristly Bill off the top of your deck. You already have an island in play and the following cards in your hand. 2 Forest, 1 Plains, Doc Orlok, Bristly Bill, Geyser Drake, and one of the failed fordings as one of the aforementioned protection spells to kind of try to save your creatures from your opponent's removal. So Alex is the person who wrote this in. He says there are 2 reasonable lines to take, being on the play and the opponent having a swamp in play. I see line 1, safer play, where you play turn 2 Forest, cast Doc Orlok, turn 3 play a Forest, cast Geyser Drake, and then turn 4 you can play your Plains, play Bristly Bill, and hold up Failed Fording to protect it.
Not in that order. You would want to go Bristly Bill, Plains, Landfall Trigger, and Failed Fording to hold it up, but yes.
Yes. I'm just reading what's in the notes.
I know. I'm correcting Alex, not you. I'm correcting Alex.
Line 2, for max value, you can go turn 2, Forest, Bristly Bill. Turn 3, Forest, Pump Bill, play Geyser Drake. Turn 4, play Doc Orlok, and then hold up Failed Fording, or hopefully play one of the plot creatures that you've drawn from your deck. So I think just the gist of this to me about when to play out your bombs is pretty interesting. But mm-hmm. this one particular situation, I think you just have to go for max value. I don't view Failed Fording as a protection spell. That's the 1 in a blue, return target non-land permanent to its owner's hand. So theoretically, you could protect your stuff. But Failed Fording's power comes later in the game when you could maybe use it as a protection spell in case of emergency and also mess with your opponent's stuff. It's more of a like break glass when needed type card rather than it is like something like Snakeskin Veil. So if all of a sudden, if you replace Failed Fording with a Snakeskin Veil, then we're talking here. But I think with Failed Fording, you have to just go for max value and run out your Bristly Bill on turn 2.
Like, do you though? The only reason I say do you though is what's the difference if you go Doc turn 2? Like there's a line here that isn't discussed, which is,
oh, sure.
Doc 2, Bill, Landfall, Pump, Doc, Attack for 3/3.
Yes, that's what I would do.
That's the line. That's
what I consider just running Bristly Bill out. So you don't do it on 2 because then you don't get a guaranteed trigger.
But to be clear, that is neither of the lines that Alex has suggested here.
Yes, that yes,
which I
that
think is fair. Which I think is also interesting. So like the line that I think you and I are both on, which is air quotes, get max value, but it doesn't involve playing Bill on two. It involves playing slightly off curve then and not playing Drake on three, but getting your value and just starting to smash, because also this hand does nothing. Like, and that's how I want, like, how I want to use failed fording is not to, I don't want to think of it as a protection spell. I want to think of it as a, I'm pumping my dock, I pump my Bill, they think they play their whatever to stabilize their, you know, giant beaver on four, they think they've got a 4-4 or whatever it is, and I go bounce, smash in for six, whatever. Like, that's how this hand is winning.
Yes. And I think also you end up taking that line anyway if we replace the fording with a snakeskin Bale also, right? You correct. Run out of dock or lock on two, play Bristly Bill on three. So no matter what, anytime you have Bristly Bill, whether or not you've got a protection spell, you should be, if you have another two drop, waiting till
correct.
Turn three to play your Bristly Bill to make sure that you get the guaranteed trigger.
Yes. But then,
I did not do that at the pre-release, and my Bristly Bill died.
Rip. But I agree. The reason I liked this What's the Play is came off the heels partially from a conversation that happened in the Lords Limited Discord after our discussion last week. You know, we got some pushback about our criticism of Seth Manfield's navigation of his draft. People feeling like we were too high on red or whatever. One of the things I was saying about starting a draft with Terrorback Stinger is like, yes, you can splash it for its plot cost, right? You can think about, well, I don't have to hold on to red for this. I just have to splash it. One, that adds a layer of restriction to your draft down the road where you're going to have to pick fixing at some point and perhaps picking it over reasonable picks if you want to play the terror. But also that it's not a great splash because it's so well delayed, right? You have to go like, turn, you know, whatever, you draw your red source, you plot it, then the following turn you cast it, and then the following turn you can attack with it. It's a lot of delayed for a card that I think is powerful early. And there were some people who were saying like, well, I don't like to run it out early anyway when I'm in a base red deck. And so it got me thinking like, I am very much, I'd like, if there's a, you know, a barometer of
yes, of, you are, put it all out there.
Yeah, are you gonna jam or are you gonna play it safe? I'm very much like, I just jam, and that's probably, it's probably to the detriment. Like, I probably could afford to pull back. It's why I appreciate when we like often will co-pilot some lines of play. Like, you're a much more conservative player than I am, but I don't think, like, I think perhaps your barometer is too far in the other direction.
I agree.
But I also think you're much better at seeing the forest for the trees and seeing a few turns down the line. Like, you zoom out so well. And I'm just like, in the immediate sense, it's just like, it's more damage. And you're like, but that's not how we're winning this game, is a lot of like our disagreements sometimes. But yes, I am very much of a jam, make them have it. And if you're not, like, I just want to caution people for like, the, you know, let's say you have something like Jasper Flint, the 3-mana 4/3 black red card that like accrues value, mills them, you get to cast the cards, whatever. Like, if you're like, well, I don't want to play that on three because they could kill it, and I'll just like, whatever, are you going to pass? Are you going to play a two drop instead? If you have something comparable, I mean, there's not really something comparable to the level of Jasper Flint, but like, you want to think about the two scenarios. Like, how bad is it if they kill it? And sometimes it is really bad, and you're like, this is my whole game plan hinges on this. Like, I had a game earlier this week on stream where my game plan hinged on resolving. I had seen, as best of three, so I had seen the counterspell from my opponent, the Quench variant, Phantom Interference. And I was like, if I don't resolve this flyer, the Griff, the white green mount uncommon, I was like, I'm going to lose. I have nothing else in my hand. So I'm going to afford to wait to play around Phantom Interference because I need this to resolve. But like, that's a very specific scenario. I would never game one. I would never best of one be like, well, they could have Phantom Interference. I'm not going to cast this. Like, you just can't afford to put cards in your opponent's hand like that. That's my feeling about playing it safe with things like this.
Well, and especially with something like Jasper Flint is a good example. That accrues value over time, right? So you're, by delaying it also, you're lessening the power level of the
correct.
Card. And half the power level of the card is that it's broken on turn three when you cast it. So yeah, like, some percentage of the time, your opponents are going to snap off a removal spell on it. But the times they don't, you win.
Yes.
Like, so what, like, you yes. also have to think about the other side of it. Like, it is, if no... Like, if the flowchart is, if opponent doesn't have removal, win the game, like, which is a really good flowchart
correct.
For you. And like, if they kill it, They traded one for one and you're still playing a game of Magic. It's like emotionally feels really bad. Mm-hmm. And there are times you're supposed to wait. There are times where you have, you know, your Snakeskin Veil and you're supposed to play off curve with your Jasper Flint and wait till turn four in your Jund decks. You can hold up Snakeskin Veil. But I think the broader issue with this JLK, what's the play to me, is viewing failed fording as a protection spell.
I think that's a great point.
That's the mental trap that our writer in fell into. But there's some questions, which is how willing are you to put bombs into the line of fire early in the game, especially when they accrue much more value if they're played on turn two and can survive. Bombs that accrue value, I generally run out there.
Yeah, he gives examples like Caustic Bronco, the black creature that can draw cards, or Ornery Tumblewag, the green 3-drop that puts counters on things. Like, you run them out there.
And then when you have cards like that, you also prioritize ways to protect them, like Snakeskin Veil, and you also prioritize Recursion in the draft so that you can run them out there, and then if your opponent deals with it, you can run them back again. Awesome. That was a cool conversation. Thank you very much, Alex, for writing in.
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Ben, this is a safe space. What would you like to get off your chest?
Well, you know, the data can get me going for sure. But I think if we talk about real stressors and real things to get mad about, it's tough sometimes balancing all of your work obligations and your life obligations. There's just a crunch on time. And sometimes in the middle of all of that, you just bump up against people that are difficult to work with, and trying to manage your interactions with those people while feeling crunched in various other parts of your life, it's easy to have a short fuse.
We all carry around different stressors, big and small. When we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively.
Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down.
One of the things I've been working on in therapy is trying to notice the times when things are affecting me negatively and to not react immediately to them, but to be able to pause and reflect and investigate the information from those moments. It is difficult, but I'm making progress.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge.
Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/lords today to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/lords. And now back to the show. All right. You ready to talk blue? Are you feeling blue, Ben?
Oh, I'm feeling blue.
So I'm glad to hear. And, you know, again, like, we're busy. You and I have not talked this week. I think, yeah, you watched a little bit of my stream this week. Like, we just haven't really interacted. So I'm glad to hear that you read through these notes and we're similarly on the same page and are on a similar journey. I have played a lot of blue this week, and I've played a lot of blue-red specifically, and I think blue and its various color pairs are pretty underrated, and my guess is, as a result, misunderstood or in tandem with are misunderstood. Like, I don't know if people understand what to do with blue in the format.
I think they need to dive even deeper into 17 lands, and I think if they peer through the murky depths of all of the statistics that 17 lands, I trust, will show the light that blue is great. When I'm sure if you filter by a certain opening hand analysis and opening draw,
what are you doing? What are
these mechanisms?
Do you want us to have listeners? Do you want people to listen to the podcast? Are you interested in that at all?
So I mean, I could take it or leave it.
So I've experienced drafts more than once. So this is about blue-red specifically, where a good rare or uncommon signpost in that color, like I'm specifically thinking of Malcolm, which is the blue-red 2/2 flying haste rare. When you've cast your second spell, you investigate. And Chrom, that's the signpost, 2 blue-red for a 2/3 flyer. And when you cast your second spell, you put a ++1 counter on it and draw a card. When those will wheel out of my first pack, and then subsequently, any gold card for that color pair are just completely ignored the rest of the draft. And so I've started to, after having that experience a couple of times and then facing some nutty blue-red decks, I'm like, oh, I think you can just get some blue-red pre-cons in drafts. And a lot has to go right. But like, the two things that have to go right are the cards are opened, obviously. But the other thing is just like the 7 other people at your table think blue-red is unplayable. And I don't think those two scenarios are as uncommon as you might think.
Yes, I would agree. I have played whatever of the however many drafts I've done this week. I've been blue-red at least 3 or 4 times, once or twice, probably to my detriment, but mm-hmm. The other times, very good decks.
And I think one of the reasons is it specifically, Blue Red specifically, has such an abysmal win rate? Is my experience drafting it is it asks you to turn your pick order kind of on its head. And I don't know if this is your experience. So I had a draft where I had two Chroms by early pack two. And then the whole rest of the draft, I was like, okay, I have to take cheap plot cards. And so like Irascible Wolverine all of a sudden is becoming a card. Not that I'm like taking highly, but when I'm picking between different pieces, I'm like, okay, how do I enable these Chroms? And how do I get my curve low? And especially if you're trying to do, I don't know if you've done any Razzle Dazzler aggro versions of this deck, you got to keep that curve low, low, low. And then that, so not only is the drafting portion of that deck difficult, but then the gameplay of the deck, like every card is a split card because it has plot, or you're thinking about, okay, do if I play Dazzler here, no, okay, I want to play it next turn and then double spell, or I want to, you know, I have found the decision making like headache inducing with some versions of these decks.
Yeah, it's very hard to sequence. I think one of the things that I've finally gotten in my head about plot, like I think I get it now, like really understand the play patterns with plot. Plot is not aggressive at all. Like plot is a value late game mechanic. Like if you're plotting, you're expecting the game to be going longer.
Right, especially like you think about something like the Wolverine. So you're either deciding, or even something like Spinewood's Paladin.
I think the Wolverine is the best example.
Because
right?
Either you're deciding to play your 3-mana 3/2.
And start attacking with it and pressuring their life total.
But you're never, that's never what you want to do with that card, basically.
Well, I mean, but unless you do, like people,
people make the mistake because they're just like, well, I want the whole carrot, you know? Like,
yes,
I want the whole thing. When it's like, you should probably just start attacking.
Yes.
Yeah.
So plot really delays stuff, like Stingerback Terror too. When you plot that and then you cast it the next turn and then you attack, like it takes so long before you get to start pressuring people with plot cards.
Right. I think it's different when it's like, I mean, if you have something else to do with your mana that turn, then certainly not different. But like, you know, when the plot cost is one mana cheaper, like with Terror or with Spinewood's Paladin, like, you can make a case for, well, I might as well plot it because it saves me a mana. I don't have anything else better to do, whatever. Maybe I can double spell once I'm on 5 instead of playing a 3 on turn 4. That's a type of thing. But like, I agree with what you're saying. And that's why I think Wolverine is such a good example.
But Blue Red's such a weird deck because you have to plot to make the thing go
right
most of the time. But then some of its cards are very aggressive. Like Razzle Dazzler in a plot deck is not great. Like it's not,
are you plotting Demonic Ruckus?
Well, sure, yeah. Then it's great.
Yeah,
but that's what I mean. Like there's two halves of Blue Red. Mm-hmm. And it's easy to have a Blue Red deck that's half and half, and those are the ones that are horrible because your cards just don't work together. And I think as the format's gone on for me, I think one of the things that has started to gel in my mind is that, you know, a week ago I would have said, and I do still like this format, I think certainly more than you do, and I'm enjoying it. I think one of the things that has started to solidify for me is a week ago I would have said, you have to meet a certain power level threshold.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's still kind of true, but I've been drafting more this week with the idea that I really want all of my cards working together towards a plan. And that's in some ways also a different kind of power. Like I've been approaching drafts more the way LSV Cube drafts. That's what I finally decided. Like he very much like picks his first card and is like, okay, this is what we're doing. And like drafts along a route in the Cube drafts. And you can do that easier in Cube because the cards are all broken and busted. But I think a lot of the cards are all broken and busted here too. And so I've been trying to follow where my first couple picks want me to go. And I've been having a lot more success when I've been doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how, like, either I navigate drafts like that, or I navigate drafts like I did with the open today, where I basically was just like, I'm just going to take whatever cards I can to keep me as open to the potential for some power down the road, and didn't end up coming, I think, for me today. But that's usually what I try and do if that's the latter half. So when you're talking about the two different types of blue red decks, what are they in your mind? I mean, obviously, it's just like kind of boils down to more aggressive, more controlling.
Well, to me, I think Blue Red's a later game deck. And I think most of the time you're supposed to avoid, like, I want to play Blue Red as control is mm-hmm. how I want to play it. I think most of the time the Razzle Dazzler, Demonic Ruckus, that life is kind of a trap. And even Wolverine, to a certain extent, like, you have to play some plot cards, but I'd much rather be plotting with the Tormenting Voice variant, the one in a red.
Oh my God, Highway Robbery, yes.
Yeah, Highway Robbery is great, but it's great because it gives you a plot card to double spell with that also helps you get to the late game and filter your cards, etc. But I think of the two versions of Blue-Red, very much want to play the late game deck. The issue that you run into is you don't have great catch-all removal.
Right.
So I've found that supplementing it with another color, like Blue-Red splashing black, Blue-Red splashing white, some of the other colors that do have just point and click, get them dead, really helps shore up some of the weaknesses of that deck. And I found myself playing more Stop Cold, or being willing to put a Stop Cold or two in my deck in the Blue-Red late game decks if I don't have other stop anything, no matter what type cards.
Yeah, I think for me, the best splash color with Blue-Red, and I agree, when I'm controlling with Blue-Red or with blue, you know, I like to be getting into a third color, but it's because white, as that third color, offers single pipped removal. You know, you get Mystical Tether, you get Lassoed by the Law, Ariat's Lullaby if you want it. And you also get one of my favorite cards we'll chat about in a minute, is Wrangler of the Damned. I think that card is excellent in these late game decks. So one of the benefits for Blue-Red, blue decks in general, is that you get good cards for it extremely late. And I want to shout out, I think we already have talked about Canyon Crab on the podcast before and our love for it, but chief among these are two of, I think, my favorite uncommons in the set, Emergent Haunting and Canyon Crab. So Crab is one in a blue, 05. If you haven't cast a spell from your hand at your end step, you get to loot. You can pay one in a blue to give it +2/-2 until end of turn. And Haunting is the one in a blue enchantment. It has Surveil for 2 and a blue as an activation. And then at the beginning of your end step, if you haven't cast something from your hand, you get to turn it into a 3/3 flyer. Each of these, I'm going to throw out a little 17 lands for you, Ben. Each of these have an, because I have seen these so late, they have an average taken at on 17 lands in the high sixes, like six, average is like 6.7 or whatever, which means these cards wheel. Like, you get them 6th, 7th, 8th. They wheel out of your first pack. And I think that is criminal, personally.
I agree that it's criminal. I also have a statistic for you. I have drafted a lot and they wheel a lot. That's how I know that they wheel. I didn't even need to open 17 lands for it.
That's great. I'm so happy for you. So yeah, I think each of these cards, if you don't like them, if you think they are bad, if you think, yeah, that's where they should go, I would encourage you.
Do people think that? I guess they do. Must. That's where their average last taken at is.
That's what they must think. So if you're one of those people, I would encourage you to draft them and think about trying to maximize them or seeing them late and trying to get them, because I think they're both great. And they're great, I think, in, honestly, they go in different decks. I mean, I'm playing them in all my blue decks. Haunting is at its best the more assertive you are, the more that you can do, like, Haunting on 2, plot Wolverine on 3 or whatever, you get to plot something or pass with a counterspell, and the more you can actively, like, you know, take advantage of it being a 3/3 flyer. And Crab is just an absolute brick wall on turn 2, and then just keeps the gas flowing, lets you dig to your stuff, smooths your draws. Obviously, I think of these two, I like Crab better. I think Crab is better in the late game decks, which I think is what Blue does a little bit better than being a sort of, you know, aggro Razzle Dazzler deck. But that brings me to the other thing, which is that all of Blue's commons go late. Caveat, as they should. I don't think Blue's commons are, you know, anything to write home about. They're all fairly situational or even weak. But it means that the wheel is really active for you if you end up in Blue. And you can get, like, I've ended up in Blue, Red, Aggro, Razzle Dazzler before, and you get Razzle Dazzler last pick. And that's the type of thing, that's a powerful place to be in. Like, when the format is all about power at the beginning of the pack, if you get power at the end of the pack, that's also something to note.
Yeah, for sure. And I think other uncommons, just besides those two, are very good as well. There's, yes, Visage Bandit, which, yes, goes way up the better other cards you have. That's the plot card that can clone your stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then Playing the Heist, we've talked about. This got some hate early on in the format, I think, but Playing the Heist as a 3-for-1, 3-mana, 4-mana draw 3, really good.
And especially it's splashable. When you
can... Yes. Yeah.
Because that, like, that's an example of a card where you do not care. Like, plotting that or casting it are the same. Because, like, the turn you spend 4 mana, you're not really going to have much mana else to do with the card you draw. So unless you're, like, really trying to hit your land drops, you probably just plot it and it's the same as, like, all right, untap, and then I'll cast that down the road, you know, for 0.
But even stuff like Slickshot Lockpicker goes probably later than it should, or the Peel from Reality variant.
I'm finally on This Town Ain't Big Enough. Yeah,
This Town Ain't Big Enough. Thank you. I just Peel from Reality in my head.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's a shout out for all you people that played Magic 10 years ago, 15 years ago. I don't want to know how long ago that was.
Those numbers. Those are rookie numbers.
But yeah, that card is also excellent. And I think, for me, the strength of blue is its uncommons, but I think the scuttle has been that blue's bad, so people are avoiding it. So you do get these great uncommons way later than you should, and I think almost all of them support control shells. Like, I don't really want to be doing the blue Razzle Dazzler life. Can you? Yes. And Emergent Haunting certainly is better in that version. Like, I like the distinction there between Haunting and Canyon Crab, because I don't think those really belong in the same deck at all. But basically, blue control cards paired with any other color is a very good deck, I think.
Well, that brings me to, and I know you're a big fan of blue-white. Blue-white is the second worst performing deck among top users on 17 lands. And it, or some three-color version of it, let's say it's Jeskai, let's say it's Esper. I've talked about Bant Saddles before, taking advantage of Steer Clear. These are all decks I like a lot, and I, chief among them, or a reason that pulls me into these kinds of decks, is Wrangler of the Damned. This is the 3WB, 1/4 flash. Beginning of your end step, if you haven't cast a card from your hand, you make a 2/2 spirit. It goes late, and you know, I'm specifically talking about versions of drafts where, like, maybe I'm a little directionless. I start off with just like a removal spell, a this, a crime land, pick six Wrangler. I'm like, well, that's a thing I can do. That's a thing I can build a deck towards. And if it's going pick six or whatever, probably means that no one else is interested in it. Gem Lightfoot is, that's the 3/3 Vigi, draws you cards. I think that card is terrible, in my opinion. And one of the reasons Wrangler is so good is that, like, it play, like, the fact that it has flash means that it plays well in the space of the other things in your deck, right? We'll still let you trigger your crab and your turn on your Emergent Haunting, etc. One of my favorite play patterns is a plot Visage Bandit early, flash in Wrangler on 5, untap, copy Wrangler with Visage Bandit, and then make 2 spirits on end step. I just think Wrangler is great, but I want to hear you talk a little bit about your experience with blue-white and how you're building the deck, how you're getting into it, all that stuff.
So I actually like blue-white better than blue-red because it doesn't suffer from the problem that blue-red does, where you get no hard removal. So what white adds to blue's control package is it adds Mystical Tether. Mm-hmm. Finally come around on that card. Card's great if you're playing certainly a control matchup. You value Mystical Tether really highly. So that's the 2W exile an artifact or creature. Basically gets anything dead, point and click. You also get Lassoed by the Law, which is great. You just get these white cards that answer anything, and then blue to provide card draw. Plus, there's a lot of cards. I mean, yes, you can do the Wrangler of the Damned thing, and if Wrangler of the Damned is the last thing left when the dust settles, that's just going to win the game. I've had that experience for myself and against blue-white a couple times. But even more than that, just a lot of the good uncommons play really well together. So Slickshot Lockpicker is great at either providing card advantage or reusing stuff that white has cast, like Getaway Glamour. Getaway Glamour is the spree card that kills the thing with the biggest power and can blink something. Getaway Glamour has a lot of synergy with Slickshot Lockpicker. And then the other thing that white provides that's awesome is the Pegasus, the 4W, 4/3 Flying Vigilance. That plays super well with Slickshot Lockpicker because you oftentimes get a rebuy it to your hand because you don't care about mounts at all in this deck. So, like, there's a lot of uncommons that are just great cards that have a lot of synergy with each other that aren't, like, blue-white don't cast spells during your turn. I truly, blue-white for me is just blue-white
control.
Control.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it's very good at that if you get a lot of the good uncommons.
I agree. I think better to think about it as control, and then you will subsequently often be passing. You will either be plotting, you'll be passing with mana up, and that will trigger your crab, your haunting, your wrangler, all that stuff. But if it's not a who came first, chicken and egg. It's like, no, you're a control deck first, and you happen to then trigger the not on your turn stuff.
Right. Yes. Like, if you just think about the way I think about drafting blue white at this point is I'm just trying to draft blue white Cheons, like blue white Vintage Cube, like, and then you end up with incidental synergies, but just take the great blue and white cards, and the great blue and white cards oftentimes play really well with each other. But I think the thing I wasn't doing early enough was valuing Mystical Tether highly. And then I just didn't have ways to answer anything which is really important.
And just to really spell out what you're talking about with the Lockpicker and Getaway Glamour combo is that you can plot Lockpicker, cast Lockpicker, fully spree glamour, kill whatever the big thing is that they have, flicker your Lockpicker. Lockpicker will come back on end step, and whatever mana you have left over, you can use to cast an instant from your graveyard, because Lockpicker is going to trigger again in your end step. And that is an incredible turn to have. And that's all while not casting anything from your hand, by the way.
Right. Well, and two, they're not great instants in blue-white, but that's where adding another color, like, I've really liked the Jeskai control space recently, because red does have a lot of great instants to cast out of the graveyard.
Yeah, for sure. So what white is adding to this mixture we've mostly talked about, you know, we chatted about Holy Cow last week, too. I think that slots in here nicely. This is the deck that I think uses it the best, because it's kind of understated, but it just gives you another tool in your arsenal for, I'm going to pass, I've got mana up, maybe I counter something, and you like the life gain, you like the slight bit of manipulate the top of your library with the scry one, you know, you get whatever. Outlaw Medic is like a fine little derpy speed bump. Bounding Felidar, this is the 6 mana 4/7, has saddle 2, when it attacks, you gain life for each other creature you control and put a counter on them. This is a huge way to catch up, I have found, or pull ahead once you're stable, or helps you be stable, you know, with the life gain. A card that you're higher on than I am, and maybe it's because I'm getting too caught up in the Drago life here, is Ariat's Lullaby, the one in a white sorcery, kill a tapped thing and gain 2 life. This is a card you can get late for sure, right? This is a way to, but I noticed you didn't name that in your Mystical Tether and your Lassoed by the Law list.
Sure, yeah, because it's more restrictive. Mm-hmm. It's definitely worse than those cards, but also, like, the fact that White's provides Mystical Tether and Ariat's Lullaby, a common, and you know you can get Ariat's Lullabies late, I mean, you're playing that card in blue-white control, because I think I'm thinking about it way less than blue-white don't cast spells on your turn. Mm-hmm. Like, I care much less about that synergy part of the deck. And another card that we had talked about in your Arena Open draft that I'm higher on than you is Nimble Brigand,
yeah,
which is 2 and a white, or 2 and a blue for the Scroll Thief, rather. The 1/3 that if you committed a crime, it's unblockable, and then when it hits, you draw a card. That, with Ariat's Lullaby or something, is quite good. You kill their thing, it turns Ariat's Lullaby into a kill-a-thing cantrip. So just that, I think, for me, is the difference on Nimble Brigand, too, is I'm valuing the removal spells super highly. Even Ariat's Lullaby, I'm playing and not cutting. You had asked, like, how does blue-white...
Yeah, how does blue-white commit crimes?
Ariat's Lullaby commits a crime real good. Sing that thief to sleep, and then lasso the police up or whatever. I don't know.
One of the cards that was in my draft that I was even thinking about was the Thunder Lasso, the equipment. And that on Nimble Brigand does let it just be unblockable, right? Because it attacks, taps one of their things, and then...
Yeah, but I don't think I want to put Thunder Lasso in my blue-white control deck.
Well, but I'm cooking up something else. I got a whole other blue-white tempo life I'm thinking about. Yeah, I'm not huge on Nimble Brigand, but because I've found like I want to either already have stuff that commits crimes and then I'm okay to take it, but I've found that crime committal is tough. Though, like, blue white does have, there's something there. Maybe I'll come back next week with something. You know, you've got there's a bunch of garbage cards you can get late that commit crimes repeatedly in blue white. So we've talked about blue red, we've talked about blue white. Have you done blue black crimes much?
Yes, and that's what I drafted in the Arena Open as well. I like blue-black crimes quite a bit.
Yeah. So what's, like, is there anything sort of different there? Is there any different way you're thinking about it? Is it still, like, are you trying to go payoffs and enablers? Are you more thinking about it like it's a control deck and the payoffs and enablers come together? That's, I'm getting a point from Ben and a nod. That's the way to do it?
Yeah. I'm trying not to talk over you. You know, be a good podcaster and all that. But yeah, I think it is more of just similar to blue-white. I want to draft blue-black control, and then I'll get an intimidation campaign late. Like, that card's incredible once you're in the deck. I think you draft blue-black by picking good cards and picking removal highly, and then the shell that fits around your removal is a control plan. And blue provides the card advantage, black provides the kill spells, you get some rares in there almost certainly, and then splash in some intimidation campaigns, and you get yourself a deck. Well, I think it's much less about the crow. It's more about playing removal, playing card advantage. It's just a classic control deck.
And do you need like any loops or any insurance, that type of thing? Or no, you're just like...
No, I just want card draw and removal and threats, 2-for-1s. I mean, like 3-for-1s, then you 2-for-1s. Blue black can 2-for-1 you a lot of times.
Yes, if you do 6 2-for-1s, that's kind of like a 3-for-1. Yeah. All right, well, let's get to it. How about I take you through your open draft and you can tell us what your thinking was and what you ended up on?
Sure. I will say before we hop into this, for blue black or crimes in general, there are a lot of bonus sheet cards that make the deck function way better. Something like Unlicensed Hearse, mm-hmm. that can commit a crime on either player's turn for no mana. Stuff like that goes way up and almost incentivizes me to draft blue black when I get cards like that.
Yeah, that's a great point. One of the cards that I've been super impressed by is Siphon Insight. Like, it's better here than it was in its original format. That's the blue-black instant. You look at the top card, 2 cards of target opponent's library, and you can, you know, exile one of them, and you get to cast it or play it, even if it's a land. And when you cast it, you can spend mana as if it were mana of any color, and has flashback for 1 blue-black. So it's 2 crimes. Everyone's got powerful stuff. It also works as in my Esper, don't cast cards from your hand on your turn. Flashing back Siphon Insight, that's not from your hand. Casting the stuff that you get from their library from exile, that's not from their hand. Siphon Insight is great.
Siphon Insight is the bane of my existence. I hate that card so much. It's been cast against me so much, and it always hits my palms, I swear to God. I had a green-white deck with all terrible cards, and I had 2 rares. I had the 4/2 that when it becomes tapped, you gain life and draw a card, whatever that legend's
Wily
name is.
Wily Duke.
Yes, and I had Roxanne, mm-hmm. and my opponent Siphon Insight of me, and I was like, great, that they're finally going to get terrible cards. Both of those cards insta-flipped up. So tilted, I snap conceded. Like, I was probably still in the game, but I was beyond tilted.
That's so funny. All right, day 2 of the Arena Open, draft 1. You sit down and see the following cards as options. Quite a juiced pack. We won't be talking about any of the commons. There's not one, but 2 copies of Honest Rutstein, 1 black-green for a 3/2. When ETBs, return target creature card from your graveyard to your hand, and creature spells you cast cost 1 less to cast. And there's a play on the heist, 2 blue-blue, sorcery, surveil 3 if you have no cards in hand, then draw 3 cards and has plot for 3 and a blue. And you have 3 rares, and they're all great.
Imagine this being a sealed pack for the Arena Open. Oh my holy god. Cow.
Primal Might is X and a green for a sorcery. Target creature you control gets +X/+X until end of turn. Then it fights up to 1 target creature you don't control. Colossal Rattleworm, 2 green-green for a 6/5. It has flash as long as you control a desert, and it has trample. And you can pay 1 and a green to exile it from your yard. Search your library for a desert card, put it onto the battlefield tapped, then shuffle. And Harvester of Misery, 3 black-black for a 5/4 with menace. When it enters the battlefield, other creatures get -2/-2 until end of turn, and you can pay 1 and a black, discard it to have target creature get -2/-2 until end of turn.
Yeah, this was a doozy. This is the pack you want opened like 2 or 3 seats to your right instead of you being the one opening it. But I mean, you're not gonna look a gift horse in the mouth here because you get a great card no matter what. I was at a bit of a loss. I was between Colossal Rattleworm and Harvester of Misery. And I really went into the open hoping I could draft blue. Like, I really, like, my power rankings were I wanted to draft blue, white, 1, blue, black, 2. And then, like, I was kind of hoping to have a reason to not be green. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, usually I feel like in this format or like other times we've said, well, it could be you. Why not you?
Yeah, someone gets to draft green.
It's really hard to be the one that's drafting green. In this format, in a high stakes draft, I think you have to be willing to fight for it. And I guess that's where the rub is for me mentally. I think going into this, I was not willing to fight for green. So I was kind of hoping to have a reason to not start down that route because I knew my fighting spirit for green wasn't that tough. So I landed on Harvest of Misery here, Harvester of Misery, over these green cards because I figured, well, I'll ship all the green to my left. Maybe I'll wheel an Honest Rutstein. That'd be great. And even more, maybe I'll wheel a play on the heist, which would be super great.
Ooh, yeah. That's a great shout. Yeah, I think like in a vacuum, I think Colossal Rattleworm is the best card in this pack, but it's pretty close with Harvester. And I think that if you want to make that meta call, if you know that you don't have that green fight in you, I think this is a great opportunity to say, hey, I'm going to pass Harvester or I'm going to pass the green and take Harvester. Because the flip side of that, and I have had a very similar feeling. Like, I think the reason you and I aren't willing to fight for green right now is that we feel like we can get power and functional decks from underrated cards from the rest of the colors. That, like, it's not worth it. I don't feel like it's the format is the be all end all is green. And so the other thing is that you get an incentive to draft a non-green color. And it's not like black. Black is, I think, largely considered the second best color. So it's not like that's underrated or underdrafted either, but certainly more than green.
I think one other thing, I've been poo-pooing 17 lands here a little bit. I am ashamed to admit, I did have the thought of, I could open 17 lands and look at the game in hand win rate for these cards, or like look at the data. And then I was like, nobody has time for that, because I haven't played with either of these. I've played against them, but I don't have any personal experience with either of Harvester or Colossal Rattleworm.
Yeah. Well, I like taking the Harvester here. So a black card under your belt, moving on to pack one, pick two, the following cards as options. Mourner's Surprise as a black common, one and a black sorcery, return up to one target creature card from your graveyard to your hand, create a 1/1 red mercenary creature token. Plays really nicely with Harvester, right? Use it as a removal spell early, get it back, and then cast it later. Kills the mercenary, unfortunately, when you cast it, but that's okay. And then moving on to the uncommons, there's a Slickshot Lockpicker, 2 and a blue 2/3, has plot for 2 and a blue, enters the battlefield, target instant or sorcery card in your graveyard gains flashback until end of turn. The flashback cost is equal to its mana cost. I mean, that's it. There's not really... Lockpicker is the best card in this pack, clearly. There's like a Gila Courser, the 2 and a red 4/2 that can draw you cards. There's a Grindstone from the bonus sheet. Like that, you're not... This pick is between, do you take Mourner's Surprise to follow up with Harvester, or do you take Lockpicker?
It's a hard pick. I mean, this is kind of similar to Seth's draft in that, like, Mourner's Surprise goes great with Harvester of Mystery. Do I really need to branch into another color here? And I thought about taking the Mourner's Surprise. I'm obsessed with Slickshot Lockpicker. It's so good. I think the power level gap is enough here.
Mm-hmm.
And I love blue and I want to draft blue anyway, that I decided to take Lockpicker to try to get into blue.
Yeah, I co-signed this pick 100%. Pack one, pick three, not great. Like, it's
really not great.
The only blue card is Seize the Secrets. That's the divination that costs one less if you've committed a crime. The only black card is Black Snag Buzzard, the 2 and a black 2/1 flyer with plot for 1 and a black. It enters the battlefield with a counter on it if something died this turn. And the rest of the pack is Naya. Best common is Patient Naturalist, I guess. 2 and a green 2/3, ETBs, mill 3. Put a land card from among the milled cards into your hand, and if you don't, you get a treasure. And I don't know, like, yeah, bunch of mediums otherwise.
Yeah, this pack basically is just a mulligan. Like, I think you put no weight on this pick, no matter what you take. For me, it was between Patient Naturalist and Seize the Secrets. Seize plays kind of well with the Slickshot Lockpicker. Ultimately, I decided to take Patient Naturalist because I have moved Patient Naturalist down in my pick order, as we've talked about last week on the podcast, and I think it has benefited my win rate greatly. But I thought there was a chance I might wheel one of the two Honest Rutsteins, and I would have kicked myself if one of those wheeled and I didn't have the Patient Naturalist.
Yeah.
I decided that Naturalist was maybe the only card that mattered out of this pack.
Okay. I'm into that. I like that for sure. Pack one, pick four. There is, of the sort of Sultai soup varietals, there's a Raven of Fell Omens. We already talked about not loving that. There's Tumbleweed Rising, 1 and a green with plot for 2 and a green, makes an XX green elemental creature equal to, where X is equal to the greatest power among creatures you control. There's Take the Fall, a card I do want to shout just about, the blue-red double spell life. It's blue for an instant. Target creature gets -1/-0 until end of turn. It gets -4/-0 until end of turn instead if you control an outlaw and you draw a card. Another card you can get super late that helps the blue-red cast 2 spells on your turn life. Obviously, it's not a card you're going to take here, but just seeing it reminded me that I wanted to shout it out.
It's so interesting because that type of card in other faster formats has just been a data darling. But like, the format just isn't not conducive to that here.
But this format is like, it's not like it's slower than other formats, at least according to whatever, like
it is though. Turns.
But
I think people are just conceding.
But the type of impact this card has is lessened because I think it's not about the little like dickering and dealings that often formats are about. It's about like it's haymaker after haymaker after haymaker a lot of the time. A couple of red uncommons, Skewer the Critics, 2 and a red deal 3 as spectacle for single red. Scalestorm Summoner, card that helped me out quite a bit in my sealed run with my Boros aggro deck, 2 and a red 3/3. When it attacks, you make a 3/1 red dino creature token if you control a creature with power 4 or greater. And Lazav, Familiar Stranger, is here. 1 blue-black for a 1/4. Whenever you commit a crime, put a ++1 counter on Lazav. Then you may exile a card from a graveyard. If a creature card was exiled this way, you can have Lazav become a copy of that card until end of turn. Triggers only once each turn.
Yeah, this is an interesting pick for me. I don't know how interesting it is. I think it's between Lazav and Skewer, and I stared at it for a while because taking Lazav here, like, kind of locks you into blue-black. But it is drafting with that style of, okay, I've got Lockpicker I want to play. I've got Harvester I want to play. Let me take Lazav to go with him and try to draft blue-black control. But there's some part of me, I don't know, the whatever we talked about, the conservative versus jamming mindset. Mm-hmm. There's some caveman voice in the back of my head that says, well, if you get cut, like, you're going to wish you had that Skewer. Mm-hmm. Like, Skewer, I think, leaves you a little more flexible. But ultimately,
it's really good with Lockpicker. Like, it's really nice.
Really good
Lockpicker
as well. But then, like, do you want to be drafting blue red in the open? I don't know. Like, not really for me.
I'm happy to do it, but I need a much bigger, like, flashing sign, like a pick 8 Malcolm or something.
Yes. Well, and I think I would much prefer to be blue black than blue red.
Correct.
Yeah. So I took Lazav.
I love the Lazav pick. And it feels like that's kind of, I mean, it's pick 4, but you've got Lockpicker, you've got Harvester, you've got Lazav. It's kind of solidifying you in blue-black at this point. And I don't usually like that decision point to happen this early in the draft, but it's happening, and I think it's worth noting that it's happening.
Yes, definitely happening, and I think if it's happening, what I was trying to tell myself was, okay, if I take this Lazav, like, I just need to not fight this. Like, I just need to try to draft a good blue-black deck.
Mm-hmm. Well, in pick 5, you had talked about being a kind of decision point, and that's where you get access to a possible Vault Plunderer. 2 and a black for a 3/1. ETB's target player draws a card and loses a life. Hellspur Brute, 4 and a red, 5/4 affinity for outlaws. Trample, it's probably not happening. Like, we're on that blue-black life, but there's a Getaway Glamour. Can I interest you in some Esper shenanigans? This is the white spree card. +1, exile target non-token creature. Return it to the battlefield under its owner's control at the beginning of the next end step. And +2, destroy target creature if no other creature has greater power.
Yeah, this is the deck I wanted to draft, was the Lockpicker, Getaway Glamour, 4/3 flying Pegasus, rebuy your Lockpicker.
Loopity loops.
Like, yeah, that's the deck I wanted to draft. So I saw the Getaway Glamour here and I was like, well, how much do I really like this Harvester? And or like the thought of Glamour goes well, I have no removal yet. Like, maybe I'll play Esper and splash the Getaway Glamour. That's not crazy, but I don't really have a reason to, like, when there's a card like Vault Plunderer here. So I was a coward and I decided to stay the course. I think if you take Getaway Glamour here, because Getaway Glamour is kind of a signal at this point, pack 1, pick 5, to me, that white is open or flowing. I like Getaway Glamour quite a bit. I could have drafted, I think, that blue-white deck or a very spicy Esper deck, or I think I also could have drafted a very cool black-white deck. In my seat. There were a lot of different options. I went with the most conservative route and took Vault Plunderer here.
And you're saying conservative because you're just like, I have an incentive to be black, so let's just stay black.
Yes. Like, no matter what, I get to play Harvester if I take Vault Plunderer here, probably. And I get myself deeper into blue-black. And blue-black is a good place to be. And I know there's going to be, from what I shipped pack 1, there's going to be a bunch of people fighting over green. Mm-hmm. So I'm anticipating probably not getting much black pack 2 because of the double honest Rutstein. But I did not ship hardly any blue. So I figured if nothing else, I'd get some blue in pack 2.
So speaking of feeling like green's going to be cut, you ended up taking... So pack 1, pick 6, you have the options between... In blue-black, there's a Rooftop Assassin, 3 and a black, 2/2, flash flying lifelink, finishes off a creature that was dealt damage this turn. Failed Fording, 1 and a blue bounce spell. And Botanical Sanctum, the blue-green fast land, is your rare land there. What are your thoughts in taking the Sanctum here?
That maybe I was going to wheel one of those two honest Rutsteins, possibly. Or, like, who knows what's going to happen down the course of the draft? Like, do I really want to be green? No, but if I open Bonnie Paul, like, you better bet your britches I'm going to be splashing Bonnie Paul in my blue-black outlaw deck.
Yeehaw, bet your britches I'm going to be playing that Bonnie Paul.
Yeah.
Okay. There we go.
Darn tootin'.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. That makes sense. Because I was,
and
like,
none of these other cards matter.
That's right. They don't matter. I mean, they're playable, but they don't matter. So I think that's fair to take the Sanctum there with the thought that you might wheel the Rutsteins. Pick 7, you do get a copy of Mourner's Surprise. You're thrilled to see that. The 2-mana reanimation spell, or raised dead effect, rather. A Seize the Secrets, pick 8, the draw spell. The draw 2 costs 1 less. if you have committed a crime this turn. And then pack one, pick nine. Any Rutsteins?
No Rutsteins. And not even a play on the heist. I was really bummed that the play on the heist was gone.
Yeah, that is brutal. You took a neutralize the guards for the board there. Any other picks you want to?
Yeah, pack one, pick 10. We wield that grindstone, baby.
So this is...
Ethan, we've been pre-recording. Ethan said, the grindstone's in your main deck? And I was like, hell yes, it's in my main deck.
This is one mana for an artifact. Three tap, target player mills two cards. If two cards that share a color were milled this way, repeat this process. I have not seen this card in play in this format yet. Have you?
Yeah, I've played with it several times, and it's been quite good for
several
me.
Times. This is a mythic in the bonus sheet.
Listen, nobody likes this card. It wheels like this, and if you're going to give me a free win con that commits crimes, I'll take my free win con that commits crimes. So I do truly, like, I am blue-black control, and grindstone is definitely one of my ways to win the game. And I think blue-black or blue decks in particular draw a lot of cards if you build them right. And so you can afford to play cards like grindstone that, like, quote, aren't worth a card because you're seeing so many cards. It just doesn't matter. And then it is a win con. Like, it's very good.
It is a win con.
In a control matchup, grindstone's a house.
And you're
I'll side it out if I'm playing against aggro.
That's fair. Yeah. And your blue black deck, I mean, it's got a clear grind. I mean, grindstone is the name of this deck, basically. Like, you are blue black, grind them out, double lockpicker, double intimidation campaign, quadruple vault plunderer. You've got the
I'm not real thrilled with the quadruple vault plunderer part of the deck.
It's grindy. It
doesn't play great with my Harvester of Mystery. ETB, kill all my vault plunderers.
I hadn't thought about that. A nice removal suite, unfortunate accident, shoot the sheriff. What do you think? How do you feel? Put your deck, what's the scale? 1 to 10. How do you feel about your deck?
1 to 10. Let's go letter grades here. I'm a teacher.
Okay,
I would give it a solid B.
Solid
maybe B. A B plus. Oh. I think I'm going to predict a 3-1 record, assuming I don't get paired against hyper aggro a bunch. I like green white's a tough matchup for this deck, like the big beefers. But I'm hoping that it was hard to draft those decks for other people in the open so that those decks are going to be powered down a little bit.
I'm sure some people got, you know, some softer pods, but my pod felt very tough. If you we won't go over my draft here, but if you want to watch the draft and hopefully many games, they'll be up on YouTube later this week. But my draft was significantly underpowered. I felt like, I mean, it just said my opens were not very powerful and didn't get past anything powerful. Like, it felt like I was at a tough table, even tougher maybe than a lot of the MTGO pods I'd been in.
Yeah, and you, well, I think the thing that worries me was I was feeling great about my deck in draft, and you were like, oh, my deck's terrible. It's really underpowered. And I looked at your deck, and I was like, oh, that kind of looks like my deck.
Our decks are very different. I mean, I don't have the signposts you do, and I've got a pretty aggressive, not aggressive, but like, I'm splashing two white cards with not great fixing. Like, I have two duels, but I'm also playing two basics, so... Well, we'll see. I've got a plan. I know what my deck's trying to do. And I think you and I are in for, if we're going to play all four matches, we're in for some grindy matches for sure.
Ooh, yes, we are.
Yeah. So I think we can hop off a little bit early here. We got a tight time window for the drafts today. So we're going to get to our matches. We have a really, we're going to have our first guest in a long time next week. So looking forward to that. Having a conversation with Andrew Cuneo. Look forward to that. But for now, I think let's win some matches and get to draft two today.
Get that bread. All right. Thank you, as always, to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
You can find all of our content on our website at lordsoflimited.com. There are links to our merch, courtesy of TeePublic, our Patreon page, if you're interested in that, our tier list, if you want that, our YouTube channel, our Twitch streams, respectively, and our episode backlog. All of that is available at lordsoflimited.com.
If you've got any feedback about the show or you want to shoot us a JLK What's the Play, give us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.